Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, the sun is out. This is Chuck Bonner.
Recording in progress.
The Chuck and Julie Show, grassroots show, true straight up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. We're going to have award-winning filmmaker and author Greg Rabideaux coming on here in a second to talk about something that really interests you, just the plight of the poor people in the country having to deal with Harvard University. Also, some breaking news, I mean, just moments ago, regarding the illegal immigrant and his family in who attacked all those people in Boulder, and his family in attempts to deport the family. Shocking, but not really information. Some updates on the Mike Lindell trial, all kinds of stuff going on.
Very, very full hour.
That's right. While we're waiting for Greg, thank you to Hope and Darcy for filling in for us on Friday.
Great.
Rev, our son, has been having a great golf summer. So we're going to be, as you say, crisscrossing the country as he's been qualifying for tournaments all over the place.
The world.
Junior
championship, and I'm going to play at Torrey Pines, joining courses, and it's going down to Trump's.
Salt
and water, sand bone in my eyes. He could put us up with Mar-a-Lago. I've not heard back.
Well, he's busy. He was talking to Putin. He was on the phone with Putin.
Well, you know, we'll get bare now.
That's right. So there'll be some miscellaneous days off. But why don't we start off with, as I said, award-winning filmmaker, author, commentator, and former teacher, apparently, to Greg Rabideaux, has a great column up about Harvard. Hey, Greg, thank you. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, great to have you on.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How are you doing?
That's great. So Chuck is a Ivy League.
No, I went. I went to the Harvard, what they call the Harvard of the South, Vanderbilt University. Now, being called the Harvard of the South was intended at one time to be a compliment. These days, it would be a defamation claim. I think.
That's right. A Vandy man as opposed to a Harvard man. I'll take the Vandy man any day.
Yeah, there you go.
And so Chuck, though, had gone to prep school and all of that. I went to Iowa State University, so some of these things were not big issues when I went to school. But I mean, this kind of thing is, Chuck has been sort of obsessed, I think it's fair to say.
I'll deny that characterization.
But you have a great column about, and I think it's true that what's happening to Harvard University, sort of Trump cracking down on it, is that they're reaping what they sowed, right?
Yeah. In this case, I think I'm right there where they have brought a lot of this on themselves, and it's been really neglected. And I think a lot of people have been looking the other way for a number of years. It's not like this just happened overnight. When you go from a campus of about 5% of your campus is foreign students to 30 to 32%, then it doesn't happen overnight. You know what's happening. You know the process, and you know what you're getting from it. And in Harvard's case, they like it because the foreign nationals, somebody's subsidizing them from China. Often the CCP subsidizes these students. From the Middle East, you get a lot of sort of sketchy NGOs or foundations with a lot of cash that are very strategic in who they send and why. And at $85,000 a pop, I don't know what Vandy was, Chuck, but at $85,000 a pop, they want the full freight, and they've kind of looked the other way when you also get the consequences, which is a lot of radicalization on your campus.
Well, and you know, we've seen the things going on at Harvard, and so Trump is what I guess he's taking away some of the grants and the endowments. And it seems to me, I mean, just as a sort of lay observer, if you're charging $85,000 tuition a year, it's like, why are you getting federal grants in the first? You're a private university. It's kind of like CPR, you know, a Colorado Public Radio, National Public Radio. It's like, why am I paying for this?
No, it's a great question. And in Harvard's case, I think what they've done smartly on their from their perspective is they've kind of convinced lawmakers and they've convinced the public that they are uniquely and maybe exclusively positioned to do the kind of research that is critical in, say, the medical field and now the AI field, technical fields, biomedical fields. So they get a lot of the grants. But when you, to your point, when you have a $54.5 billion university endowment, $54.5 billion, then on top of that, you're getting anywhere between $7 and $10 billion more of taxpayer funds. But the truth is that there are a lot of other institutions that are not as radical, that do not foster radicalization on their campus. The faculty, because Harvard faculty is very active, and many of them have an agenda as well, there are a lot of other American institutions that would love to have those grants and are just as well positioned with good people to do good, upstanding, thorough, rigorous science, you know, the gold standard research that we look for. We just have to wean ourselves off of some of these elite universities that, in my mind, have not been deserving of the kind of status or money we give them for the last 20, 25 years.
Do you know of anybody who's not in the cancer research field? Every grant is, you know, cancer research. This is cancer research. research. And I mean, they spend billions, not just at Harvard, but all across the country. Cancer research, cancer. You'd think they'd come up with something other than chemotherapy for the billions they're spending on them. And who's checking whether these lines of inquiry, you know, if you've heard Hoffman LaRoche, and my father had a rival company, and they do research and all that. And, you know, if it looked like a line of research wasn't doing very well, they'd pull it because they had a monetary interest. At these academic institutions, they just can go years and years and years. And whether it's
until Doge.
There's no Doge for that.
Right.
But it's just kind of like, oh, more cancer research, you know, we'll come up with nothing and then we'll hit you for everything. But I mean, it's this research where it's really not profit driven, which the only thing that causes research to be, you know, cut off. It just goes on and on and on. That's why everybody and their mother's doing it.
Yeah, well, you touch on, I think, one of the bigger problems of the bigger picture, which is a lot of these grants have almost no measurable outcome accountability built in. Yeah, so they can just, and it's kind of a, it's an assumed that it's just going to go year on year on year on year. And part of it is just because universities like Harvard or Columbia or NYU, where I did my film director training, they look at it as almost a prestige and status, and it helps them market their brand to get a whole lot of other grants and money and endowment and boosters and alums in donating, because they can say, look, we have this prestigious research that we do. But to your point, what's been missing is the research really moving the needle?
Right.
Well, and no one cares about that. Well, and what about, too, when you talk about the radicalization, I mean, you look at some of the elite universities where you had the pro-Palestinian people taking over the campuses and the university let them. I mean, it even happened at Metro State University here in Denver, right? And then you look at what happened in Boulder, in the last few days. To me, you can't deny that there's a connection there, or there's at least a nexus there. And I think that people are now looking at these universities and be like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't just fostering free speech here. This is promoting radicalization of things that are dangerous to Americans, I think.
I'll tell you what, it may be a little silly, but I'll draw you the quick film analogy. It's sort of like incubating a whole bunch of dinosaur eggs like in a Jurassic Park type movie, and then wondering why they break out when they start to get a little bit, you know, they go ahead and crack and they start getting growing, and they're like, my goodness, what happened? Where'd they go? Well, they went wherever the heck they want to, basically. The incubation on a lot of the campuses does not just stop within the campus quad. And when you start seeing a lot of the radical, I'll put air quotes around it, students, because we know a lot of these folks are professional agitators, and they're coming with a specific agenda. It doesn't stop with taking over the library. It doesn't stop with stopping classes. It doesn't stop with the intimidation or coercion on campus. It doesn't stop with the anti-Semitism. The goal is to, as you put it before, is to sow the seeds of divisiveness and polarization and to tear the fabric apart, not engage in free speech and balanced debate and find solutions. This is not a balanced debate that's going on. And their hope, I'm convinced from what I've seen now for years, is that the incubation breaks out like these dinosaurs and just tramples wherever it goes outside of campuses as well.
And I think, you know, we did when we were, this was several years ago, we talked to a young woman. She was going to DU and got kicked out of DU essentially for hate speech and hate crimes because she was a Trump supporter, right? And there was no due process. There was no anything. And you can imagine any friends of hers who might have been Trump supporters learned real fast to keep their mouth shut. So in its own way, you know, the whole free speech thing, I think, on some of these elite universities only goes one way. If it's the approved speech, then you get to say it all you want. And if it's like a conservative or Trump supporting kind of speech, then you literally can get kicked out of the university for being hateful.
Well, I've talked to a number of students over the last few years, and I was even surprised by the number of students I've talked to who have said, look, meaning when they talk to me and they say, look, you're like the first professor we've had who is not pushing a liberal agenda, who's at least trying to show balance and neutral and objective, and we feel we can say whatever our opinion is. I've had a couple students tell me right out, we have to transfer from other places because we found out pretty quickly that if we wanted to get a B or better, we better regurgitate and spout back exactly what the professor was saying. And in all cases, it was a very, very leftist, far left agenda and ideology. And, you know, the students are in a tough spot because if they don't, they don't get a good grade. And if they do and stick by their principles, a lot of times there's repercussions, and that should never be. So you're right. When you have this high profile kind of protests that are strategic, it tends to chill the opposition because they don't want to be penalized.
Right.
Well, you know, part of the thing is it can't be reformed. I mean, Harvard is a closed system. It has a president and senior fellows, which is on the, I guess, the very top. That's where Penny Pritzker is heading the board. And they just renominate themselves or choose themselves the replacements. There's a board below that that's supposed to be elected by the alumni, but it's not, and it's rigged. Ackerman tried to say, hey, how can I get some conservative voices as trustees, and he found out he couldn't. They don't even publish the documents for the latter to know how you could put up somebody, but they're not going to allow you to. So once the left gets its claws into some entity, it only way it lets go is after the thing dies. And it's going to be, Harvard is not going to reform. It is not, it cannot. Its faculty is all left wing. There is no kind of old kind of kernel of the old Protestant, whatever it was, conservatism that once existed. That's 100% gone, and it is not going to change. It just isn't. I don't, you know, they may do make some quote-unquote reforms or everything else, but the left never lets go, and it's not going to let go of Harvard. Harvard's problem is the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
You know, it's a campus. We've got a zero on the freedom of speech by a group called FIRE. If you go there, you know, you better toe the line. And you're going to school with a huge number of Chinese and Indian students who constitute most of that 32%. And there are no vestiges to hide. And so we have a 14-year-old, and he does well in standardized testing and does well at school. He will not be applying to Harvard. Because we're not going to pay the $500,000 over 4 years, because we're middle class families, so that we'd get no break on that. We'd be like the guitar ones. But he ain't applying, and it's amazing. You know, when I was in president, they just send you all these brochures to Harvard so they can reject you. You know, hey, come on, apply. Okay, no. So I think Harvard's not going to, it's not, it's on a downward trend, and I don't see any of it stopping.
Yeah, I don't. I would agree with you. I think that because of the model that they have developed and the people that they put in their ranks, and it's sort of inbreeding now for decades, yeah, that's the model they want. I think what they're going to find is they're going to be like the person with really long arms that's been embracing a big old ice cube, and now the heat's on, and the ice cube's going to keep melting until pretty soon they're just, their arms are going to come back, and they're just going to hold on to a whole lot less. And like I said, it's time for other state universities, public universities, technical colleges to get a big piece of the pie that some of these elite universities have locked up, because they are not the only best and brightest by far who are doing the kind of research. We've got a lot of talented people across the U.S., and it's time other universities have a chance to prove they can do really important, good, thorough research as well and get those grants.
They can waste money just as well as Harvard can. They can throw away.
Probably without all the radicalization.
Well, I think part of it is, I mean, under, you know, Elon Musk and Doge and just, you know, Trump, I think people's, and I think we've all talked about this before, people have been red-pilled, right? Their eyes have been opened. And like you said, you're like, wait, Harvard has how many billions in an endowment fund? And why is it getting even a dime of my tax money, right? And I think that's the kind of thing, like you talk about the icicle, that really heats up the melting, because people start going, I mean, no one's jumping up and defending Harvard these days.
Only Harvard. And, yeah, you know, that's because they're the ones with the vested interest and the most to lose. But when you have billions of dollars, you can dip into those billions of dollars. But my question remains, if your campus, and we have of the top 100 universities and colleges right now in the U.S. that has foreign students, they have between 26 and 54% of their student body are not Americans. So if you're saying anywhere from 2 to 5 seats of every class of 10 are not going to be American students, then I just want some justification. I want some idea of what are we getting in back to this, because we know countries like China, for example, it's not reciprocal. I know in the film industry, it is not reciprocal. We follow the laws. We follow intellectual property and copyright and trademark and co-production and distribution. It is not followed in China. They have a very, let's say, casual, at best, relationship and respect for a lot of the laws. So what are we getting? And when these students are coming over, I just want us all to have a better sense of who's coming over and what's the intent. And I draw the analogy, guys, to the border. If you've got millions of people coming over and there's no vetting going on, you can say, look, a lot of these folks are good. That's probably true. But there's a percentage that mean harm. Well, if you've got, you know, 1.4 million foreign students coming to the U.S., a good chunk of them probably are the classic model, right? Share, you know, get a better understanding of culture, connect, we gain, they gain. But there's a percentage, as we've seen, that are coming over with anything but good intent. And those are the ones we need to know beforehand. And you can't stop the water coming in and gushing until you plug it, at least temporarily, until you can fix the problem, right? You can't fix it when you're getting all the water gushing in and it's flooding. So you got to almost freeze stuff first and say, let's just stop this and fix the model, fix what's broken, and move forward with eyes open. And hopefully that's what we're doing more of.
Yeah. You bring up a great point. You know, it's just not Harvard with its international students. There are places like Auburn, which you wouldn't think people from Qatar were dying to get into, but they are in India and so forth, because they can't, you know, they're not going to make Harvard. So it's much tougher to go in a lot of these very parochial state universities, because half the class is overseas. You know, classes aren't any bigger. So, you know, good luck getting into the state school, because they too love the full tuition scam.
Yeah, and they keep raising their tuition. So that's part of the issue. When they keep, and there's no cap, and state legislatures often are lobbied hard, and they have a very, they don't necessarily know what's happening at the university, so they just kind of often just push this stuff through as another spending bill. then the universities have no restriction or rationale to say, well, why shouldn't we go 5, 10, 15% increase year on year on year? And then we'll just look the other way with a bunch of these foreign students that pay full freight, and we'll end up still getting the money. But it does come with a major price. And we're seeing what price that is now. And I don't think we should afford or can afford to keep paying that kind of price, at least until our eyes are open. But universities share a lot of blame because they want it, because they want to be able to keep those tuition going up and up and up. I mean, come on now. You know, $70,000, $75,000, $80,000 and up per year, I don't think you can justify. That's why I also feel I've done surveys over the last 10 years with a number of students each semester, sort of a pre-survey, and I get numbers between 30 and 40% of the students really are better suited off with a different option than the classic college option anyway. Trade schools, vocational schools, my goodness. Learn a trade, and you know, you'll be in your mid-20s, you'll have no debt, you'll be driving around a cool car, you'll probably have your own home, you'll have money in the bank. You know, we always need electricians and plumbers and tradespersons, but we don't really need necessarily another radicalized sociology major.
No. Well, and you know, you're right. And the whole thing is, like, I don't know what happened anymore. I mean, it's assumed that if you go to college, you're going to have this massive debt. You know, I was a TV reporter for years. And I mean, there were a ton of people I worked with who were award-winning, great reporters who didn't even have a college degree. But all of these younger kids coming in, all of them had masters. And it's like, you don't need a master's degree, right? And I would imagine the film industry is somewhat similar. You look at these people, TikTok influencers, you know, the people on YouTube that our son watches, they're doing okay. And they didn't graduate from Harvard Film School or anything like that. Well, I know, but you know what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but we've to your point, though, we have, because it's a vested interest in a lot of these universities to credentialize success to the point where you make people believe they can't have success or achieve anything in life unless they have every credential, every certificate program out there. And the bottom line is it takes away from people's own initiative and ingenuity and ability to do some trial and error stuff and get good at their craft. And but again, the incentive's there because they're making money. So, but the credentialized success factor in the U.S. has gotten to absurd proportions.
Well, listen, Greg, you have been wonderful, and I know we got to let you go. Where can people? I mean, you've got your columns up everywhere. Where can people find you and read more about you?
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate it. Just Greg the Filmmaker, gregthefilmmaker.com. You can go to gregthefilmmaker@gmail.com as well, and you can share your thoughts with us. And then valmarfilms.com takes a look at our films. We have Letters to the Pope, a documentary about the Pope that just passed, Pope Francis. And that one is coming to... this month should be coming to Amazon Prime, that documentary film. So a lot of projects going on, and always happy to collaborate with people that want to do some quality work.
Wow, thank you. That sounds amazing.
Great talking with you. And
Wish you- my pleasure.
All right. Thank you. Greg Rapido.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Greg Rapido there. It is just interesting. You look at what's going on at the universities, and I think even Trump has said, why not do more for trade schools and things like that, right? And I mean, people talk about it, but then sometimes nothing ever happens with it.
Well, you know, the first time I sat in my first class, you know, in some huge auditorium at Vanderbilt and so forth, my freshman year, I mean, what am I doing here? what am I learning? I mean, why am I spending 4 years just vapidly reciting, you know, some humanities deal? And I never did understand why I spent 4 years.
So, like, well, universities can make a lot of money.
Well, I knew because I was going to get drafted to Vietnam, so that was a real impetus to stay in. But it, you know, there is going to be maybe one day where they kind of go, no, you 1 year of college and you go to law school. 1 year, you know, 2 years of med, and then you go to med. You don't have to spend 4 years just screwing around, even with a finance degree. I mean, how many years do you need to spend?
You can just ask ChatGPT. So
ChatGPT will
do it all.
You're irrelevant anymore. I mean, you're just a carbon using offset. I mean,
yeah. Oh, from Star Trek.
Yeah, there you go.
Carbon. What did the carbon unit?
Carbon unit.
What's her name? V'ger wanted to destroy all the carbon units that were infesting the ship. Yeah. So that'll be AI. Will be like, let's just destroy the carbon units infesting the planet. Okay, want to switch gears here. So this, like, it's a tease at the top of the show, just breaking. The illegal immigrant Mohamed Solimar, who is being held on $10 million bond in Boulder for the attack on the people in Boulder, the Jewish people in Boulder, his family, his wife and his kids, Trump was going to the Department of Homeland Security, I guess, and Department of Justice, going to deport them. But go figure, a federal judge in Colorado says, nope, you have to put a temporary restraining order on that and says they have to serve them. There has to be a hearing. And that was filed. I've never seen this in a court document before by a next friend. I don't even know what that is. But the petitioner is named Susanna Dvortson. If you Google that name, it comes up as an immigration attorney. And an immigration attorney by the same name was suspended by South Dakota Supreme Court for 115 days for misconduct under the immigration matters. So, and my question is, so number one, okay, so at first I think we all said, good, deport the family. I mean, that's a deterrent, right? It's like you come here.
Well, family got it. He came in on a tourist visa, which you stay 3 months approximately, and in August of 22, and then next month he applied for asylum. Okay, I'm an oppressed individual out of Egypt, and then he got a work permit because all tourists need to work. Then he brought over his entire family, wife and five kids, all which he put in public schools, and they all came on tourist visas and probably all extended beyond the thing. And so now, we've got them permanently. They're all here.
We gave him a driver's license.
Driver's license,
which means he probably got a ballot from Jenna Griswold. So now he's voting.
Absolutely.
He's voting.
Absolutely. And he wanted to wait till his daughter graduated from high school, as you do. He wants to make sure they're well-educated in the U.S. system.
He took full advantage of all the stuff that we're paying for
all here on tourist visas because there wouldn't be anything else to get in.
And so here's the thing. And this guy's been talking about it forever. So never mind the fact that they're investigating whether his family knew something about what was going on or had any suspicions.
Did you know Dad was going to torture the Jewish people in Boulder?
No, but my guess is probably not. At least, but at any rate, it's a kind of thing, to me, it's one of the beautiful things about what Trump does is deport the family. Then that's a deterrent, right? You're way less likely to come over here, stay here illegally, take advantage of the system, take advantage of American taxpayers, bring your whole family over, and then commit crimes if you know that your family will be deported. So it's a deterrent effect. And what is the freaking frame of mind by these organizations who say, oh no, we want these people to stay here? I mean, and they wonder why Colorado, pardon my language, but sucks anymore, right? It's like, so you get a federal, and the federal judge says, oh yeah, they're making a great point. No one is saying, no, this is not the kind of people, of immigrants we want to come to our country, that come over here
tourists.
And kill.
They came over as tourists, and they kind of go, oh yeah, but you can't take us out. Once we're here.
Yeah, he had no one, he wasn't a tourist. What was he sightseeing, right? Except Boulder.
It's been a nice case of firebombs and folks.
Yeah, I mean, it had been planning it for a year. So this wasn't some triggered nut job, right? This appears to be, as the FBI says, a terrorist attack. And the idiot Boulder police chief is like, I was surprised they said that. It's like, really?
Really?
Somebody is firebombing a group of Jewish people shouting Free Palestine, and you don't think that there might
sure
be an act
of motivation.
You're not sure what the motive is?
Maybe they just want a film job.
Yeah, it's kind of like, but then not only that, but it's like, no, now let's use American tax dollars to pay to keep the family here.
And let's give them a full hearing.
We're going to pay for his defense, right? And I get that's the way the system works. But now we have to pay to fight to keep his family here, too.
And each of the kids needs separate representation because, they may...
Well, that's right. Some are going to be adults. I mean, I just don't for the life of me understand. And you know this, Susanna Dvortson is not... first, let me back up. Have you ever heard of this next friend? It's an ex parte motion.
Next friend, sure. Next friend. I don't have no idea. I mean, maybe it's something new where you get to... You get to, you didn't be no family members, but next time.
And my guess is the family doesn't even know she filed this, right? This is just simply.
They have no idea who she is.
Yeah, they have no idea who she is. No, they have any idea who's paying for it, but someone, she's not, oh, you know, there for free. It's like, why couldn't we, you would think we could at least agree this is not a good family to keep in the United States, right? That just send them back home to Egypt.
They all came over on tourist visa. Their end of their vacation is over.
Right. You think.
Let them go home.
I'm pretty sure if I go to Egypt and I like firebomb a group of citizens, a group of Muslims and shouting something anti-Muslim, that they wouldn't say, well, she's on a tourist visa. And we can't not. And now we, the Egyptian people, are going to pay to try to defend her and let her stay here. It's like, no, that wouldn't happen. Only in the insanity, and particularly the insanity that is Colorado. Because, of course, it's a Biden appointed judge. Perhaps an auto pen Biden appointed judge as well. So that's my rant on that. So we'll be keeping an eye on it. There's a hearing, I think, June 13th. Oh, it'll go on forever. So now we're going to pay for all of this. It's like, just send these people home, you know, and don't let them in the first place.
Include the federal judge. Yeah. It deport her to Cairo, too.
I mean, and you wonder, and Peg Cage, we should give her credit. She was talking on Peg Cage out of Boulder County on Fox News this morning, right?
That's great.
So she at least is a sane voice in Boulder. The Boulder County Commissioners had just 2 days before the attack put a statement up saying, oh, you know, not exactly free Palestine, but supporting that kind of cause. And it's like, what do you think happens when you do that? This is what happens. And then when you try to set things right, you've got these radical Democrats who just want to tear about.
She's probably around the mill.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I see Jacob. Yeah, deport the judges. There you go, Leo. Jacob has been patiently waiting with his hand up. Hey, Jacob, what do you got for us today?
The mayor just last week, the mayor Boulder just last week says if holding on to these illegal immigrants is terrible, is immoral, then we're immoral, but we're going to do it. I mean, I don't know the exact quote, but he said that last week. He says, we're not going to cooperate with ICE.
No.
Right.
He said it.
Right. Exactly. And we stand by that. And it's like, you know, why do you think this guy came to Boulder? Right. There's a reason he's, well, again, because of the demonstration there. But it's like he's not firebombing people in, you know, Cheyenne. Right. He's not firebombing people in Dallas. He's not firebombing people in cities, you know, that don't tolerate this kind of thing.
He's not for a good jury pool. In
well, exactly. Exactly.
No, he would have been taken out in Dallas. I know there's a law that after close to sunset, if you step on somebody's lawn, they have the right to shoot you. The other reason I called was that there was a guy named Admiral Yamamoto.
Yeah.
And he was the one that facilitated the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And if you look up his education, he's a Harvard graduate.
Yes, he is.
Oh, well, there you go.
All right.
Fortune playing cards.
All right. Hey, Jacob, thank you.
Good
information. Bye. Want to switch gears a little bit now, too, and then talk about the Mike Lindell trial.
Going well.
He's at the defamation trial. Eric Coomer has alleged that Mike Lindell defamed him.
Ruined his career,
ruined his life. There's all kinds of people following this and talking about it. One of the things I think that's interesting is, and we'll see, the judge is limiting the kind of evidence that can go in. I know Ash Epp has made the comment that they're going to be able, I've seen her in some of her broadcasts, that the election machine system is on trial too. I'll be honest, I don't know how much of that the judge is going to let in.
Not in, because that's not their defense.
Because
their defense is not truth, which, in fact, I'm not sure. Well, I think the defense is, you got to be kidding me. Eric Coomer's got the worst reputation in the world. You can't defame him.
Well,
and because if there's damages, he caused it himself. Like he sent out an email and say, okay, now time to shake down the pillow guy money tree.
Right. Well, exactly. And I think that is a defense. They've said they're not going to, their defense is not going to, they're not going to put the whole election system on trial, which is wise of them, I think. Don't even go there. I think a lot, we would hope that some evidence will come out regarding the voting machines and some of the issues that we saw in Arapahoe County and other places and across the country. But I think what they're saying is Eric Coomer was rabidly anti-Trump. He's claiming that once Mike Lindell started, you know, attacking bullying him in the machines or going after him in the machines, that everybody became aware of him and his life became a living hell and he lost his job. And they're leaving out, and the judge is not apparently admitting some of that.
Alcoholism.
The alcoholism, the driving issues, some of the wife issues.
It really has changed over time, I have to admit. The key part of trials now are the motions in limine, which is what evidence can you put in. Before, you know, the court would allow you pretty much put your case in that you wanted to. But in recent years, you know, the judges say, hey, motions in limine, I can determine who wins.
That's right. That's a, you're right to put their finger on it. So that's what they did to Tina Peters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They said you can't actually put in any
self-defense. No, you can't.
You can't do that. So
so she's crooking the trial as all the judges do. So the key was, you know, do you get to indicate what his problems were? No.
But the good news is, though, they are admitting a lot of his social media posts. So he was posting all of this rabid anti-Trump stuff. And Lindell's attorneys are arguing, hey, whatever issues people had with Eric Coomer, he caused his own problem, right? He posted all this stuff online. He created the problem, right? Not Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell may have said some stuff. Mike Lindell thought what he was saying was true, and they weren't going to get into proving whether it's true or not. So therefore, it's free speech. I don't know that that flies. I don't think you get to libel somebody just because you think it's true.
No, that's not a defense.
Right.
Truth is a defense, not your truth.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I think it is wise. I mean, to me, it seems obvious. I mean, Eric Coomer had so many problems long before that he created, right? All the hatred against him and the attacks against him were coming because of the stuff he was posting and the stuff he was doing. Matt Crane, who was a former Arapahoe County clerk who's connected to Dominion, I think is on the stand today.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Coomer took this, and I'm not sure what all they would get into on that. One of the things that came out today, too, that's kind of interesting, I mean, some people are making a lot of it, and I just wanted to put my perspective on it. So in federal court, like almost nothing is permitted, right? In federal court, it's not, in my experience, uncommon for the judge to say that number one, there's no cameras are allowed. There's no live streaming. It's not unusual for a judge to order. There's no live blogging. You can't tweet live. I've seen it in federal court. State court, sometimes you can. But even then, I've covered trials where the judges have said, no, nothing live. In federal court, you can't go into the hallway in this case and text people or do stuff. You have to actually go outside of the courtroom. Mike Lindell was in Mike Lindell fashion giving interviews all over the place. And the judge, the plaintiffs, Coomer's attorneys, clearly have a private investigator following Mike Lindell. They're tracking him seeing what he's doing. Monitor him. And again, that's not that uncommon, I don't think, in a case like this. They wanted Mike Lindell sanctioned for violating a court order. And I think Mike Lindell said, hey, didn't realize it. So the judge just says no more interviews. So we were hoping to get somebody on, but I think everybody down there is kind of nervous about what does this no interviews, how far does that extend and to who, right? So, but the trial, it's going on. It goes through June 10th. I think it looks good for Mike Lindell. I mean,
well, that's fair to tell you. This is one you have no idea. It depends totally on the jury. It depends on the personality of the people. It is one where you could not say, I know how this is going to turn out. And also, it's not going to be one, you know, you'll come to the end of the trial and you'll say, well, I know this is going to be A or B. And judges can tell you, they often, unless they crooked it like this one did early on for all the motions in limine, they'll say, you know, they can't predict it because it's so much that interpersonal, you know, that 12 angry men kind of thing, the interpersonal relationships, you know, some care very much, some just want to get the hell out of there.
This is what I am hopeful of, is I think there is a time when a jury, because of all the fake news media, would have been like, oh, you know, you're a threat to democracy if you question the elections. I think that so much has come out about everything, right? That if you're like, an average person anymore, well, maybe not, but, you know, you question pretty much everything anymore. It's like, if the government tells you, we have the gold standard voting system, you're like, no, we don't. I don't even know anything about it, but I just assume you're lying. Yeah,
you're lying to me again.
You need to get this vaccine or you will die. Nope, I think not. No. Need to wear a mask and 6 feet. Nope, I'm not going to buy that either. So I think that there is I'm glad that
a healthy skepticism among
yes,
the public,
who might be like, whatever, you know, Mike Lindell did or didn't say. I think Lindell is expected to testify. And he's an articulate guy, I think. I'm sure they practice with
him. If you're a defense attorney,
well, yeah, you can make it.
I mean, you're just, you know, you can't control that guy. And they can't control Coomer, so.
Yeah, and well, I think Coomer's done. The cross-examination was. And again, it's hard to kind of follow.
I thought they would have kept that cross-examination going for days.
So Leo is saying, Chuck, can they subpoena the source code for the machines? One, in this case, I don't think they're going to even try because, again, they're in this case, they're saying.
Is that a question that.
That would come up.
Yeah.
But I would imagine, and he's saying the reason is they would want to see how the machines work. Can they be manipulated, et cetera?
No, it's none of that.
I mean, sometimes if you've got proprietary corporate information and stuff like that, they usually don't
they're not disputing.
Well, in this case, but I mean, just in general, could you do that?
You know, it'd be subject to all kinds of protective orders and everything else.
Right. And maybe the judge review it. So that's what's going on with the Mike Lindell trial. And so if you don't see Mike Lindell, that's why the judge told them to quit doing interviews. And it's always, and I've been seeing a lot of people online are kind of saying, oh, that's censorship and blah, blah, blah. Again, in my experience, that is not that unusual. And in fact, in my experience, what usually happens, because this is always frustrating as a reporter, you try to say, oh, come on, Mike, do the interview. It'll make you, you know. And he'd be like, no, my lawyer told me not to because you don't want to make the judge mad.
The judge not telling you not to.
Well, but I.
Most of the time, judges do not say, nobody can talk.
Yes.
You know, if you want to make a fool of yourself outside the courtroom, you can. But those are the old days, and now it's different.
Some other interesting things, too, and I'm not sure how this came out. So they've been arguing also about some evidence that Coomer wants to talk about. They want to have presented in a closed courtroom, not open to the public, in part, apparently, because they don't want to taint the jury, because Coomer has all kinds of other defamation lawsuits out there.
And the defendants in those cases could find out. I'm not sure you can care. Look, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm shaking the money trees.
Right, exactly. I mean, I don't know how that ruling came down, but to me, the correct ruling would be the judge saying, hey, that's your problem.
Yeah.
But the only concern I have here is this lawsuit. Right. It's not my fault if you've got lawsuits filed all over the place and you know, information. It's not my job to like try to not have those jury pools tainted. They haven't even been, you know.
You just never know.
Yeah, you never know. So it'll be, but again, the judge's. You know, like we had this ridiculous Boulder judge, federal judge who said, no, you can't deport the family of that guy in Boulder. Other thing, too, this is kind of fun. The Democrats have turned into piranhas and cannibals. Karine Jean-Pierre has decided, after much soul searching, much
major
and talking major. To her financial investor, that she is leaving the Democrat Party because she is writing a book, a tell-all book about the, quote, broken White House. Now, Ted Trimpa was tweeting, what a traitor. It's like,
who's
our Democrat friend strategist? It's like,
we got to get Ted. Does everyone want to see Ted back?
Yeah, we'll get Ted back. I was laughing to myself saying, that didn't take long. I mean, poor Karine Jean-Pierre, who stood up and said, Biden is fine. She was his staunchest defender. Turns around. I mean, that's as bad as some of the people betraying Trump. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden she's writing a book about the, and she's not even calling it the truth about the White House. No, the broken White House.
Yeah.
Which is stupid because she was part of the White House. So if it was broken, why didn't she try to fix that? I mean.
Well, because writing a book. That's why.
I just think she's looking, now Jake Tapper's book hasn't been doing that well, and he's been getting excoriated, but hers might actually have some information, right? I mean, the Jake Tapper book is just saying how they and the media were hoodwinked and nothing was their fault, but here's some juicy gossip.
They look back with humility.
Yeah, they look back with humility. She just seems to be going full traitor. I mean, what do you make of it?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, she's going to talk about sex parties they had there. Who knows?
Yeah, she knows who the cocaine is, right? Back to the Mike Lindell thing. We can't wait for the sale after he's found innocent. Use the coupon hashtag not guilty. And then they were talking about the source code, but would that show Mike did not defame as he spoke the truth? And Dr. Donda, that was part of the legal strategy of the defense team, which I think was smart. They're not going to try to say that Mike Lindell was telling the truth. about the election machine system, because that would be an enormously complicated can of worms. Instead, what they're going to show is Eric Coomer's problems were the result of Eric Coomer's
self-induced
his own social postings, not the result of what Mike Lindell did or didn't do. One other thing too, I wanted to talk about, going back to why does Colorado, and again, pardon my language, suck. There was a story in the Denver Post, and again, of course, the Denver Post never connects the dots, right? No one connects
the dots.
Denver Post
sucks.
Yeah, exactly. So the number of unsold home listings in the Metro Denver area is 50% higher than it was a year ago, and 6.5 times higher than it was in 2021. And they don't know why. They don't know why. Nobody's trying to buy a home.
All those positive images going out of people firebombing people, of the homeless, of all the
people, itinerant attendant getting stabbed on the 16th Street.
Yeah, you can't go out there. Yeah, well, you're such a welcoming. Hey, how do we get there, honey?
Yeah.
Well, we get a tourist visa.
Yeah, we get a tourist visa, and then we go there. I mean, what, Colorado is now ranked the second most dangerous state in the country, I think, right?
It's a little bizarre.
Well, and that's happened too. The people who rent those pods, the moving pods, it's like Colorado is one of the highest destinations for people moving out.
Get the hell out of town.
But again, and it's like, you know, we've talked before, we used to think, you know, it was bad when the developers controlled Denver, but at least the developers kept things safe. We maybe didn't have any parkland and you could build your development right up to the edge of the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was
no green space, but they wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah, but you could at least walk down the sidewalk.
Yeah,
right?
Sidewalks are safe as could be.
And in the meantime, you could sell your home if you wanted to, too. So, oh, we've got a caller on line one. Hey.
Hey, you.
Hey, who is it, Sherry, or who's on line one?
Hi, I'm Sherry. Am I on
line
one?
Hey, yeah, you're on. Go, take it away.
All right. For a long time, I thought about asking you guys this, but now I really want to. So in the past, Trump has made comments about Joe Biden saying he's shot. He doesn't even know he's alive. He said he's shot. He's got half of his head left. But Saturday, he retruthed. So he put a post on social media, retruthed it on his thing. There is no Joe Biden, executed in 2020, the post says. Biden clones, doubles, and robotic engineered soulless, mindless entities are what you see. Democrats don't know the difference.
I'll go with it.
Personally, I think that I've seen a lot about that too. I think Trump is just trolling people on that. I don't think that Joe Biden was dead and this has been a fake Joe Biden. I mean, if I don't know which is worse, right? That they're Trump, the old man.
Joe Biden need to be a little more complimentary.
Yeah, really. But I just think Trump just does that because he makes the – even like when he teases Sherry, he's going to run again, right, in 2028. I think he just does that to troll people and make the left media head explode.
But you never know.
You never know. What do you think?
Well, I think that Biden received a 13-fire salute, which is reserved for funerals. Four ranking service members. I think that it was a kind of a cold, overcast day in D.C., and yet his inauguration was bright and sunny, and Italy posted it 12 hours before.
The Truman Show, yeah.
Well, you hit, whichever you believe, I think you hit in a great point, and that is nobody trusts the government and the institutions
or
the media.
Or their own eyes.
You know, because here's the thing, you have to say, would I be shocked and say no if it turned out to all that Trump is right and you're right? No. I'd be like,
maybe. Yeah.
You could.
Deep state.
Hey, Sherry, thank you for the call. As always, appreciate it.
All right. A healthy amount of skepticism.
Okay. back to the listings, though. I think this is the kind of thing that, when is Denver going to wake up? Because a lot of this is driven, I think, by the people. Well, sooner or later, they cancel their home. I guess everyone's moving out. Maybe sooner or later, there won't be anyone left except the homeless people, which sometimes I think is how they want it, right? Because then they get all the grants. Although that's drying up too. But anyway, that's brought to you by the Democrats. I mean, on top of all of the other stuff.
I want to know how it compares to 2007, 2008, because that was a a catastrophic time for Denver and across the country. And quite frankly, Denver just stayed the same. The prices just stalled out and there's no increase. Up here, where we are right now, Westminster, I mean, they dropped almost by 40%. I mean, a huge, huge drop. And so, you know, the bigger the supply you have and fewer buyers, the prices.
Well, and downtown, I mean,
downtown
is like it's like a 33% vacancy rate.
Yeah.
And the buildings are now going, they can't
well,
meet.
Well, and Trump will be getting rid of all these offices, federal offices. And
right.
Just,
so there you go. If you have to sell your home in Metro Denver, you build it
now.
Because I think there's nothing on the horizon that makes it seem like that's going to get any better. So,
maybe.
And again, the Denver Post is like, they don't know, they don't understand.
What's going on? What's wrong with you people? You're living in a progressive heaven. My God.
From Jim Jackson, the dummy they used invaded by termites. Oh, that's on Joe Biden. Okay, that's going to wrap it up.
That's it.
We will see everybody back. We'll be here on Party Friday.
Party Friday. Take care.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I missed the beginning. I'll have to catch the replay. Thanks.
All right. That was great. Great beginning.
Thank you. Bye, everybody on Zoom.